Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law School and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on modern money mechanics right after this message. Well, back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." That clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that you have to pay for the use of that paper money. You know, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew, and they knew as a matter of law, that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin to take away the people's right to property and to destroy their property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation of all liberty. And let me teach you how to do just that. That's in my business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home schoolers. Now, for more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free of charge. You can call right now to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. My business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and then send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, I received a letter here, an email, not too long ago. And the listener asked me why it was that the states don't follow Article 1, Section 10. And Edwin Vieira, in his book Pieces of Eight, answers that question on page 21. And it's called the disabilities. That's the powers and disabilities, the several monetary disabilities of Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1. So listen to this. Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 carefully distinguishes among the powers to coin money, emit bills of credit, and make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, all of which these powers it denies to the state. Now, the reason for this enumeration is historically obvious. And although of the same general character and affecting the same economic and social interests, these powers were separately used by the states and only in part delegated by them to the Continental Congress under the Articles of Confederation. the states and Congress might have coined money without emitting bills of credit, and the states might have done so without making anything but specie a tender in payment of debt. The states and Congress might have emitted and did emit bills of credit without coining money, and the states might have done so without making their bills or Congress's legal tender. And the states might have made and did make various non-monetary things, legal tenders, without coining money or emitting bills of credit. But Congress had no power to declare such things a legal tender at all. The legal implications of this enumeration are also obvious. First, the power of the states once claimed to coin money did and does not include a power to emit bills of credit, and vice versa. Otherwise, the double prohibition in Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 would be redundant, an interpretation at odds with the basic canons of constitutional analysis. Moreover, because these prohibitions associated with the powers granted to Congress to coin money and to regulate the value thereof in a foreign coin most obviously constitute members of the same family, being upon the same subject and governed by the same policy. Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 unequivocally demonstrates that the power to coin money in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5 also does not include the power to emit bills of credit. And second, the disability of the states under Article 1, Section 10 to emit bills of credit does not reasonably imply a lack of authority to borrow money on the public credit by issuing securities not intended to function as paper money. This, however, reciprocally indicates that the power to borrow money in Article 1, Clause 8, or Section 8, Clause 2, does not include a power to emit such bills. Further, in keeping with the strict distinction between those two powers observed in the Articles of Confederation. Now, states can borrow money, but they cannot emit or create paper currency. I'll tell you a little story here. Back in the early 80s, when we first took up this issue of Article 1, Section 10, we too saw that the state of Idaho was dealing in commercial paper, and we said to ourselves, well, that isn't right. The state should not make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt, but the process jumped the tracks of sanity with House Joint Resolution 192, which was enacted in 1933 during the Great Depression. During this great banking crisis, President Roosevelt came along and he said, hey, listen, what we got to do is implement the first plank of the Communist Manifesto, the second and the fifth planks. So the first, second, and fifth planks, which were already in operation, they wanted to give exclusive power to by eliminating gold coins. So they called in all the gold. An act that was patently illegal, and none of us should have given our gold up. We should have refused. And we should have refused based upon our right to property, number one, and number two, Article 1, Section 10. But the people of America, enmeshed now in this Great Depression, said, well, we think Franklin Roosevelt is the savior of the world, at least on an equal footing with Jesus Christ of Nazareth. And because of that, we're going to follow our savior, and we're going to eliminate gold. Now, remember, gold and silver coin comes from the common law, comes from the law of Moses. And it's predicated upon just weights and balances. Paper money, which got started nationally with the Federal Reserve Act back in 1914, and with the passage of that Federal Reserve Act, was patently illegal and unlawful and unconstitutional and ought not to have been done, but Congress did it anyway. So from time to time, we see that our Congress acts in an illegal manner, but they always do so with a political motivation. So when you take the Federal Reserve Act of 1914, the people of America prior to World War I, after 1900, you know, we're sitting over here fat and happy, dumb as a box of rocks, and the people of America couldn't have cared less. When people become wealthy and they get plenty of everything that they want, and somebody comes along with a dumb idea, three or four generations removed now, remember, from the collapse of our continental currency in 1783. They said, what's wrong with paper money? And remember, Americans had paper money right from the get-go, right from the beginning of our Constitution. We had a U.S. National Bank issuing paper money. We've always had paper money with gold. And bad money drives good money out. As a result of the paper money, we had depressions and recessions and economic crises. But in 1933, the government was very crafty. They blamed the economic collapse on gold. They blamed it on specie. And the people bought it. People said, well, that makes sense to us. We think gold causes all of our problems. Now, you'd have thought these people would have said, well, gee, did God give us gold because he wanted to spoil our fun and ruin our day? Or did God give us gold because it was good for us and that's what he wanted us to use? In any event, back in the 1930s, we came to the conclusion that God had made a mistake by giving us gold and silver coin, and that Franklin Roosevelt and the Democratic Party was going to fix that mistake by giving us paper money and credit. And from that day to this, what's what we've been using. Now, of course, we've had recessions, depressions, and wars that are all caused by inflation and paper money. We don't see it that way. We don't believe it. But that's the report of history. So now, the question is asked, well, why does the state then violate these principles of our Constitution? And the answer is because our Congress is a Congress of communist socialist philosophers. Ted Kennedy is a communist. He runs on the Democratic ticket. Arlen Specter is a Republican. He runs on the Republican ticket, and he too is a communist. And how do I know that? Because these senators consistently vote in all of their voting habits and patterns for those principles and policies that support and promote the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And they constantly vote against, and abrogate, and do away with any of the principles that come from the Bible or God or the Mosaic Law. Now, it's a choice that we all have to make, and God gave us that right to choose. You'll find it in Deuteronomy chapter 30, where he uses the word choose. He says, choose you now this day. He said, who are you going to follow? Me? Elijah did the same thing with the people in his time. He says, well, now choose. You know, you're going to follow God or you're going to follow Baal. You'll make up your mind. Do one or the other. Get with the program. Bring them on, as George would say. And we did. We have. We are. And we will. And our choice has always been paper money over gold. Now, I'm going to show you that I think there's more profit in gold than there is in paper. I'm going to demonstrate that to you in the next broadcast. But I actually tested this with Barrister Zinn up in Idaho. Article 1, Section 10, the judge would say in a court, he would say, I'm going to fine you $300. And so those of us at Barrister Zinn say, well, it's fine, Judge, and we'll pay you if you'll tell us where we can get lawful money to pay this debt, because the state of Idaho is collaterally estopped by Article 1, Section 10 from demanding anything but gold or silver coin, and we don't have any gold or silver coin. So you might as well demand that we pay in Russian rubles or Indian money or in French francs or something else. And you know, for 3 years, from 1982 to 1986, 4 years, I guess, we shut the courts down from imposing fines on those of us that could make that article under Article 1, Section 10. Now, we were planning to test this on taxes, and there was a number of other areas that we wanted to get involved in, but in November of 1986, Congress enacted the Tax Reform Act of 1986, and in the process of doing that, they gave us back our gold and silver coin, and Ron Paul was instrumental in writing the legislation and shot us down because they gave us back our gold and silver coin. So if you want to pay your debts in gold coin, just walk right in the door and pay it. You got $50 gold pieces. So next time they fine you $300, you can walk into court and you can give them, you know, six $50 gold pieces and pay the debt at law instead of discharging it in equity. Of course, to do that today will cost you about 2,400 Federal Reserve notes to pay it off, because, you know, if you got six coins, $400 a coin, you know, four sixes, $2,400. 2,400 Federal Reserve note barter papers to buy $300 in lawful money. So when they give you the gold coins and the paper money, Congress in 1965, under the Coinage Act of 1965, they said there's no difference. Congress, God, in Washington, D.C., the great white father said, there's no difference between a clad quarter and a silver quarter. There's no difference between a $50 gold piece, a $20 gold piece, and a $20 bill or a $50 bill issued by the Federal Reserve. There's no par value that's established. There's no exchange value established. So in 1986, they declared all gold coins to be numismatic. And I'll show you that next story tomorrow night. And I'll show you how to use them. They're very beneficial. They're very advantageous. These numismatic coins, you know, somebody says to me, well, who in his right mind would want to go in and pay a fine of $300 by paying $2,400 to get gold coin? Well, I hear you. But you know what's good for the goose is sauce for the gander. You ever stop and think about using it in the opposite direction? Instead of working for $100 a day, why don't you work for, $10 a day? Yeah, a quarter of an ounce of gold would be about $100. And instead of paying taxes on $100, you'd be paying taxes on $10, but you'd have the purchasing power of $100. I know, it's a little tough to swallow first blush, but mull it over a little bit, and then we'll see if we can explain that to you as we progress along. Well, Vieira goes on to say that the prohibition in Article 1, Section 10 against the states making anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts proves that their former powers to coin money, to emit bills of credit, and to borrow money were not the source of the general power of the states claimed before the ratification of the Constitution to declare that or what is a legal tender. Otherwise, the framers would not have inserted in that clause a special prohibition against all but one form of legal tender, or left that prohibition itself unqualified as to the continued vitality of the borrowing power. Well, not immediately obvious is why Article 1, Section 10 leaves to the states the authority to make gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. After all, the self-same clause disables the states from coining any form of money themselves, including gold and silver. And as analysis shows, Congress has a narrow legal tender authority coextensive with its power under Article 1, Section 8 to coin money and regulate the value thereof, an authority that derives from common law and embraces only gold and silver coin as general media of payment. Self-evidently, if Congress coined a silver dollar of X grains intrinsic value and weight in a fine metal and declared that coin a legal tender for its intrinsic value, then for the state to declare such a dollar legal tender for more or less than that intrinsic value would inject chaos into the monetary system, contrary to the basic purpose of the founders. Therefore, the reservation of legal tender authority to the states cannot reasonably operate so as to conflict with the parallel authority of Congress. So I might point out that Article 1, Section 10 applies to the states, but not to the United States of America. So the federal government, the Supreme Court now tells us, they can print up $5 bills or $5 gold pieces. The states cannot do either. And the states are restricted in making only gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. So when the state makes legislation and says you shall pay your taxes at this rate over here, they have to collect that in gold and silver coin. The United States does not. The states do. This would inject chaos into the monetary system. So from that date to this, the states now, from 1933, I say from that date, that from 1933 on, they went the way of the federal government and took paper money as well as gold and said, we rely upon the general laws of the United States, House Joint Resolution 192 in place of Article 1, Section 10. So the states simply followed Congress. Well, where in the world did Congress get the power by a mere statute to overturn Article 1, Section 10? They didn't. They didn't have that power, but they just went ahead and did it anyway. Congress has been doing that, you know, for a long time. The people of America are so legally illiterate. Not so back in 1787. Americans were legally literate. They understood law. Today you go to public school and they teach you all kinds of things in public school. But they don't teach you anything about law. And because of that, America has now grown into a nation of imbeciles, legal imbeciles. Even the people that go to law school aren't all that bright. I mean, they're not all of them dumb, but you know, they're just not all that bright. See, when you go to educate somebody, you can educate people to be ignorant. Ignorant is simply, I don't know. So we just don't tell you what you need to know. You hear me advertise on the basic courtroom strategy and procedure ads. And there's an ad there by a law professor by the name of James Nielsen. And then he says, listen, law school students graduate from the fourth largest law school in the United States and they don't know how to write a will, a contract, a pleading. These people graduate from law school and they're ignorant. They have a degree that says they're smart. They go out and charge fees to their clients as if they knew what the answers were, but they don't, and this law school professor says they don't. I'm a law school teacher, and I can tell you the same thing. It's been my experience. The Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court said 90% of the lawyers in America are dumb. Well, he said they're incompetent. Jerry Spence, in one of his books, I think it was with Justice Vernon, said that what we need to do in America is to go out and educate lawyers for the people. That's what we do here at the Gordon Law School. We educate lawyers for the people. I was just talking to a student here a little while ago, and I said, that's the purpose of the Gordon Law School. It's to educate lawyers for the people. And there's no one who has a greater interest in your case than you do. And so we educate the defendant in pro se litigation to represent himself. It's been my contention for many years that you just can't get anybody to represent you and to take an interest in your cause or your case the way you can. When you're faced with going to jail, when you're faced with the consequences of this litigation, boy, you can get real, real interested in it. Now go out here and hire a lawyer who can't even write a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And see if you can get him interested in your case. You can get him interested in taking the fee. You can't get him interested in winning it. So the answer then to Article 1, Section 10 is right up front. You know, it's right in your face. The Congress and the states simply ignore it. It's the law. It's a requirement. And they don't follow it. And they don't follow it for a reason, because there's money and profit to be made in paper. There's no money and there's no profit to be made in gold coin. And that's just where reality is located. So Dan Rather would say, follow the money. Now, in addition, there's a monograph here. Edwin Vieira wrote a little monograph. We got to take a break here and give you a little commercial, but let me tell you a little bit about where you can get this book called Pieces of Eight. You know, I can't cover the whole thing here in one broadcast, but I can tell you where you can get it. It's the Sound Dollar Committee, Post Office Box 226, Fort Lee, New Jersey, 07024. I don't know what the price is. My copy goes back to 1983. I assume they're still in operation. I talked to Edwin Vieira about a month ago. tried to get him on Truth Radio to put a program on. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if he's on or not. I haven't checked into it any further. But when I talked to him, he's alive and well. He's a good drinking buddy of Franklin Sanders. Franklin Sanders puts out the Money Changer, remember? I recommend The Privateer, The Money Changer, and I recommend Pieces of Eight. Now, I'm going to show you how to use gold coin. I use it. I'm on a gold standard. It works like a shot. I'm the only guy in Ozark County that uses it. If I was the only guy in America that used gold coin, I'd benefit and profit from it, and everybody else would lose money and be complaining about their paper money and inflation. When you get off of paper and you go onto gold, you can get rid of inflation, and you know, you're not really concerned about the national economy. So I think I'll share that with you, and I'll do that next time. Sound Dollar Committee, P.O. Box 226, Fort Lee, New Jersey, 07024. I guess you ought to write them first or call them and see if you can. I don't have a phone number here. See if you can get a price for the book. Edwin Vieira, that's V-I-E-I-R-A. It's an odd name. V-I-E-I-R-A, Jr. These are the three guys that I think are the three companies in America. One of them is Australia, here in the world, I guess I'd say today, that know where the bear desert and the rubber meets the road. And that's the Privateer in Australia, Franklin Sanders in Tennessee, and this guy Edwin Vieira is up in Maryland with the Sound Dollar Committee. Now, those of us that practice gold and silver, you won't find us out here complaining very much. I mean, we're the kind of people that buy, sell, trade, do business, do it in gold, do it in silver coin. We live our lives and insulate ourselves from inflation, OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, and the various and sundry government agents and agencies. I used to complain a lot about government. I don't anymore. After I quit doing business with them, I found that there's no reason to complain about them. It's like doing business with the mafia. You know, if you do business with the mafia, there's consequences. And then there's problems. Stop doing business with them, they're going to disappear. I'll be back and we'll talk about this monograph, The Federal Reserve System, A Fatal Parasite on the American Body Politic by Edwin Vieira in the second half of today's program right after this. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush Sr. back in 1992 and then his boy George Jr. in 2000 said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what they're selling. Jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in employment. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. There's no money in public business. And there's no money in employment or jobs, jobs, jobs. I mean, that's just where reality is located. Now, it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance. Your inheritance calls for great wealth. It's time that you learned how to collect those benefits of the Old Covenant contract and to collect your benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's called property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on my CD Home School for Adults, my business school. And why don't you order my free General Law CD package at the same time? I mean, it's free of charge. The CD package is free. The business school is not. But the place to start is to find out, well, why in the world would I want to learn about private business anyway? Why would I want to get involved in gold and silver coin? Well, let me tell you in my CD package. It's free of charge. It didn't cost anything. Let me spend about 4 hours with you and lay out some concepts and ideas that are pretty revolutionary. they're revolutionary today. They were just common sense 100 years ago, you know. Your great-granddaddy back in 1880 or 1900 or 1920, he didn't have any problem with gold and silver coin. He understood money. In modern times, we're the people that are having a problem understanding the difference between fiat currency and specie, not your great-great-granddaddy. So why don't you call right now and order that free general law CD package. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and then send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. That's spelled G-O-R-D-O-N. .org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, told you about pieces of eight. That's about, I don't know, 400 pages here. Yeah, about 400 pages. Now, Vieira writes extensively. I mean, this guy writes like most people talk. And he's got a lot to say. And in one of his monographs, he said, Dr. Edward Vieira, this is now written by Richard L. Sulyam, he's the chairman of the Sound Dollar Committee. And he's writing about Vieira, the guy that wrote the book, you know, on Pieces of Eight. He said, Dr. Vieira has condensed into this monograph the substance of addresses that he has given to small groups that represent a cross-section of American citizens concerned with fundamental monetary and banking reform. And you can just about figure that the people in America that are interested in fundamental banking and monetary reform, if there's 5 million people in this country that are concerned or interested in that, well, maybe a few more than that. Let's go with 5%. We had 290. Now what we got? Times 0.05. That'd be 14.5 million. Well, that's quite a few people. There might be 15 million people in the United States of America that are interested in this. But it's a minority. It's just a bunch of fanatics out here beating their gums over nothing. That's my view. Beating their gums over nothing. I think they're correct. I think they're right. I support their activities. But trying to convince the other 95% of Americans that they ought to stay out of Flo's whorehouse, I think, is a waste of time. People want to buy Hustler and Playboy magazine. They want to go to Flo's whorehouse. They want to practice every kind of filth, rotten perversion, every kind of theft, every kind of exploitation that they possibly can. They don't like the penalties. They don't like AIDS, herpes, and VD. They don't like bankruptcy, inflation. They don't like the consequences of their actions, but they certainly do like to participate in sin. I mean, people just love it. They get right into it and wallow in it. So I'm going to sit off here on the sidelines and say, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. If that's what you want to do, fine. But if you're getting tired of the penalties, if bankruptcy and inflation and you can't pay your bills and you're not making very much and the government's taking about, 40, 50, 60% of everything that you create and produce and you're getting tired of it, there's a solution to that problem. There's a solution. And about 15 million people in the country, that 5% of the people that own 100% of the gold and silver, they're in on something. They got something going for them that you haven't heard about. So listen up. Now, Dr. Vieira's purpose is to present an analysis of the Federal Reserve System, its fiat paper currency, and fractional reserve banking that infrequently, if ever, appears in the popular press, in the media, in the discourse of legislators or political candidates, or worse yet, in the nation's schools. So nobody in America, you don't hear Dan Rather talking about specie and paper money, or you won't hear about it in public school, you're not going to hear about it in college. You're not going to hear about it in economics. Now, you can search it out. There's plenty of material out here that describes and explains just weights and balances, as the Bible calls it, or pieces of eight, as Edwin Vieira calls it. This analysis, however, is crucial to popular understanding of what the Federal Reserve System is and what it does and the dangers that it poses to the America's economy and Republican institutions of government. And such an understanding is crucial to sweeping legislative or judicial reform of the monetary and banking systems, and hopefully before the Federal Reserve System causes an economic and social catastrophe. But if not, at least after such a catastrophe makes painfully clear to every thinking man and woman the urgent necessity of such reform along constitutional lines. Now, I don't think that anybody's going to stop the impending collapse of our monetary system. We saw that in 1783. There isn't any way to stop it. The money's already been printed. In fact, George Bush is in the process right now, as I speak, of putting another $4 trillion into circulation. We're on the verge of hyperinflation. $4 trillion, that's a bunch of bucks, and they're going to put that into operation between now and the end of 2005. Now, this is about July 1st, 2004, so in the next 18 months, if George Bush has his way, and I'm sure if John Kerry is elected here in the election, I'm sure he'll continue on with the monetary expansion. That's not left up to presidents. That's handled by the Federal Reserve. Dr. Vieira's central theme is that today's scheme of Federal Reserve System fiat currency and fractional reserve banking is plainly unconstitutional, inherently fraudulent, economically unworkable, and in the long run, subversive of America's political traditions of individual liberty and private property. This may appear at first blush a harsh indictment of a system in existence since 1913, and which the vast majority of Americans apparently accept, albeit on next to no real knowledge. But harsh or not, it is an indictment. Substantial political or economic theory and historical evidence supports it. And hopefully Dr. Vieira's message will prove to be a warning that comes, if not too soon, at least not too late. And that's why I operate a business school, a law school, and we teach business. One of our schools here, one of our classes, deals with business. It's a 5-day school. I can take anybody of average intelligence and teach you how to function like my great-great-granddaddy did. In my case, my great-granddad. In 1900, and make $100,000. Now, that's in Federal Reserve note dollars. $100,000 a year. Now, the median average income is about $41,000 as I speak. But as we hyperinflate, you know, that'll go up. So, based upon 2004 dollar values, you should be making about $100,000 a year, about 2.5 times what the median average is. And that's because you should, if you apply the principles of gold and silver, of just weights and balances that we get from God and Moses, you should do better than the average guy on the street. That's all. I do. My students do. And I think you should. Now, if you're going to deal in commercial paper, you're going to deal in checks, credit cards, mortgages, debt and debt instruments, well, then you're going to make the median average or less. Now, it is true that there are people out there like Enron that make billions and billions of dollars and then go bankrupt. Or companies like Ford and General Motors that make billions and billions of dollars and they owe more than they're worth. And that's just where reality's at. It's where the economic system is. So if you want to have a financial statement that says I'm worth $500,000 and I've got liabilities $250,000, so my net assets are $250,000 and I don't have possession of any of them, they're all sitting over here in the bank, or all of my equitable interests that I possess and hold are in the form of equities. I don't own anything free and clear, but I have an equitable interest in somebody else's property. Be my guest. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Now, if you'd like to have a farm, if you'd like to have a, you know, 200-300 acres of land free and clear, and maybe 50 or 100 cows free and clear, and 100 or 200 sheep free and clear, and maybe 100 or 200 ounces of gold that you have free and clear, and maybe you'd like to own your furniture and an automobile or two and a pickup and a truck, and you'd like to own all that free and clear, you can do all of that right now in America today under our Constitution. You just can't do it with paper money, bank accounts, borrowed funds, checks, credit cards, interest, usury, debts, bonds, stocks. I don't know how you do that. But I do know how to put real wealth together, and I do know how to teach people of average intelligence. Now, if you got super intelligence, you know, if you got an intelligence quotient that's out around 160 or above, oh, I don't think there's anybody that can help you. You're just permanently handicapped. Now, if you're an average Joe Sixpack and you can get out and roll up your sleeves and go to work, you know, and your IQ is 100 or 120, you know, something down here that we can actually talk to and make sense to, we could probably help you. Now, listen to the introduction. Although the press, the media, and major political figures never mention it, the major cause of the financial dangers facing America today is this incestuous relationship between the national government and a quasi-public but largely private banking cartel deceptively called the Federal Reserve System. And although historians can state with little difficulty when various stages in the establishment and evolution of the Federal Reserve took place, understanding what the Federal Reserve has done to the American economy and money and how and why the Federal Reserve has done it isn't quite as easy. Rather, it requires careful attention to certain critical details of American monetary and banking theory and history that are usually forgotten in discussions of the problems of the Federal Reserve System and what it has caused. Now let's do a little analysis here. You know, most contemporary debate on the Federal Reserve focuses on whether what people call the dollar should in some way be linked to or backed by gold or other valuable commodity. The fundamental unexamined and totally fallacious assumption in this debate is that paper currency that the Federal Reserve generates, the Federal Reserve note, an FRN, is as a matter of fact and a matter of law a dollar at all. As American constitutional law and history show, the Federal Reserve note is not a dollar. It has never been declared by Congress to be a dollar. It could never be an actual dollar, notwithstanding all of the statutes or resolutions that Congress might enact. Rather, as cited in the Constitution and as historically defined in the Coinage Act of 1792, a dollar is a specific coin. It contains 371.25 grains of fine silver. Very simply put, the Constitution fixes the monetary unit of the United States as this silver dollar, empowers Congress to coin silver and gold coin, the values of which are to be regulated in relation to the dollar, prohibits any government from issuing what the Founding Fathers denominated bills of credit, and what we today would understand as paper currency redeemable in silver or gold, and it outlaws any form of legal tender except silver and gold coins. Thus, from the constitutional perspective, it is literally senseless to talk about making the dollar redeemable or adopting a silver or gold-backed dollar, and that such debate as occurs on the Federal Reserve System and the Federal Reserve Note fixes on this senseless point and demonstrates how confused the American people are concerning their own monetary system. So defining the dollar constitutionally, however, is only the first step in explaining the real problem that the Federal Reserve System poses. Three other matters require careful consideration. And that is, first, the evolution of the Federal Reserve System exemplifies the typical historical devolution or corruption of our monetary system. And the monetary systems throughout the world in the last two centuries, from commodity money to fiduciary money to fiat money. And here, accurate definitions of various forms of money would be very useful. Well, hang on, let me give you one more message. And we'll come back and we'll take a look at what commodity money is, and then fiduciary money, and then fiat money. You know, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m. While his coffee pot made in Japan is perking, he puts his blow dryer made in Taiwan to work, and he shaves with his electric razor made in Hong Kong. He puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan, his designer jeans made in Singapore, a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. Then after cooking up some breakfast in his electric skillet made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico how much money he can spend today. This is called free trade, isn't it? Then after setting his watch made in Switzerland to the radio made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car made in Germany, goes looking for a job, as he has for many months. He's looking for a good-paying American job. And then after the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while, so he puts on a pair of sandals made in Brazil, he pours himself a glass of wine made in France, turns on his TV made in Japan, and he ponders again why it is he can't find a good-paying American job. Then instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business dealing in property instead of income and fiat money? Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's step one. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free. Doesn't cost you a dime. So why don't you call now? The number, 417-273-4967. And then if you're online and you prefer, you could go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. So if you can't come to school, we'll bring the school to you. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free of charge. The telephone number again, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Edwin Vieira in Pieces of Eight. This is a monograph, a summary, a little summary here of what he talks about in this book called Pieces of Eight. Let's take a look at commodity money. Money comes in three forms. Commodity money, number one. A commodity money is a medium of exchange, the units of which are fixed amounts of an actual commodity that has value other than as money alone. Historically, silver and gold coins of known standard weights and designs have emerged as the preferred commodity monies of the entire civilized world. Now, in the case of a commodity money, the actual commodity, the silver or the gold, is both the medium of exchange and the standard of value, that is, the unit in which prices are stated in the marketplace. The supply of commodity money is self-limited by the costs of mining, refining, and coining silver and gold coin. New supplies of the commodity money will be coined only to the extent that coinage is economically profitable in comparison to alternative investments of the capital needed to mine the precious metals. So when we deal with commodity money, it comes into circulation through labor. You have to work, create this commodity money by expending an equal amount of labor. Fiduciary money, number two, fiduciary money. That's a medium of exchange composed of some intrinsically valueless substance such as paper, which the issuer promises to redeem on demand in a commodity money such as silver or gold coin, or in a monetary commodity such as silver or gold bullion, or as we do it today in going to Walmart and buying the product off the shelf. Historically, private bank notes and government treasury notes were fiduciary monies in general circulation prior to the 1930s. In the case of a fiduciary money, the paper promise to pay is the medium of day-to-day exchange, but the actual money and the ultimate standard of value remains the promised medium of payment, the silver or the gold coin, with which the note is to be redeemed. The supply of a fiduciary money is also self-limited by the requirement of redemption. In a free market system, new supplies of a fiduciary money will be issued only to the extent that the issuer is confident that he can satisfy demands for redemption of its notes in a commodity money. The condition in a free market system is crucial. And it's crucial because the self-limiting aspect of the fiduciary money historically has failed in an economic regime in which the government or power or powerful private interests license the issuers of the fiduciary money to suspend or repudiate entirely their promises to redeem those monies on demand in coin. That's what happened in the 1930s when government came up with House Joint Resolution 192. It was a repudiation of the payment of our debts in gold coin. All right, now finally we come to fiat money. So our republic started out with irredeemable fiat currency, and it fell in 1783. We learned a lesson from that and wrote into our Constitution, never again paper money. Article 1, Section 10, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. So we went from the irredeemable fiat paper currency of the colonial period to hard money, a commodity money, gold and silver coin. In 1933, we changed the rules of the game and went to a fiduciary money. That is, paper backed by gold that we were promised was in Fort Knox and that they would give it to us someday. Now we've come up to the fiat money. Finally, a fiat money is a medium of exchange composed of some intrinsically valueless substance which the issuer does not promise to redeem in any commodity or any fiduciary money. Because a fiat money has no direct legal connection to a commodity money in terms of a redemption, and therefore no real economic cost to its production. The supply of a fiat money can never be self-limiting, and the value of a fiat money is always largely a matter of public confidence in the economic or political stability of the issuer. For these reasons, historically, every major fiat money has self-destructed in what is popularly called hyperinflation, that is, extreme decreases in purchasing power. It's caused by either unlimited increases in the supply of that fiat money by the issuer or accelerating loss of public confidence in the continued value of the money or the economic or political fortunes of its issuer, or in some cases, both. And then second, the theory and history of fiduciary money, which is also largely the theory and history of banking, must always focus on the ever-present problem of redemption. Emphasis on the noun problem is warranted because a fiduciary money is by definition a promise to pay the real commodity money of the country. A piece of commodity money, typically a silver or gold coin, is itself payment because it contains a fixed weight of precious metal. But a unit of fiduciary money, typically a bank or government treasury note, is only a contingent and uncertain payment that depends upon the ability or the willingness of the issuer to redeem it. And there always exists a temptation for issuers to renege on their promises to redeem. Thus, fiduciary money always threatens to become fraudulent money. Not surprisingly, therefore, the history of fiduciary money has been more or less the history of monetary fraud, both economic and political. And third, the danger of fraud in the issuance of fiduciary money becomes particularly acute in the case of modern fractional reserve banking. And under the fractional reserve banking, the bank always issues more units of fiduciary money, supposedly payable on demand, than it has units of commodity money available for redemption, counting on the unlikelihood that the majority of its customers will ever seek redemption all at the same time. Thus, modern fractional reserve banking is inherently fraudulent because, one, for the bank simultaneously to fulfill all of its promises to redeem its outstanding notes on demand is impossible. Two, the bank's managers know that complete redemption on demand is impossible, and therefore that the bank's promises to pay are false. And third, the bank's customers, by and large, are ignorant of how the fractional reserve scheme works and the dangers that it poses to them and to their money. 3, fully to comprehend the significance of the Federal Reserve System also requires recognition that no such thing is politically neutral or politically independent. For ultimately, money is a medium both for storing wealth and for exchanging wealth. Thus, money is both itself a form of property and a mechanism for implementing contracts that transfer other kinds of property from one party to another. So even in a free market economy with a limited government, money exhibits a necessarily political character. Inasmuch as the degree to which the government protects the monetary system from private fraud and public looting reflects the degree to which the government respects and protects private property and the right of private contract. A free market economy will have one kind of money. A mixed or fascist economy will have another kind of money. A socialist economy will have a third kind of money, and so on. But in each case, the monetary system will accurately reflect the values of the political system. Thus, once again, the contemporary debate over whether and to what degree the Federal Reserve System should be politically independent of the Congress. Originally, the Constitution made Americans money independent of electoral politics by fixing the monetary unit as silver dollars, outlawing bills of credit, and allowing only silver and gold coin to operate as a legal tender in the payment of debt. But the Constitution is itself the basic political charter of the country. So far from making money politically independent or politically neutral, the Constitution actually settled on one very specific political formula for money, namely a commodity money of historically proven intrinsic value, the supply of which the political authorities could not manipulate at will. Now, the reason for doing that was because the Founding Fathers followed the biblical injunction on thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. We had gone through an inflationary period from 1692 through 1783. We lost 90% of our purchasing power and wealth. We actually experienced the demise of our continental currencies. We experimented with it, and we came up with a bad result. And as a result of that, we said, let's fix it. And we did. So from 1787 through 1933, we had it fixed. Then in 1933, the people of America decided through their representatives, Franklin Roosevelt and the Democratic Congress, that God had made a mistake and so had our founding fathers. Commodity money was no good. Commodity money was our problem. What we wanted was number two in the list. We wanted a fiduciary money. Well, fiduciary money then degenerates into fiat currency. That's where we are today. We are actually reliving the same mistake that we made from 1692 to 1783. People who cannot learn from their mistakes are bound to repeat them. We Americans couldn't learn from the period 1692 to 1783, so now we're going to learn by making the same mistake again from 1913 through 2004. Or whenever the thing collapses in the next few years or few months or few weeks. I don't know which is coming first. All right, now we'll be back with the closer on the pieces of eight, the modern money mechanics, next time. So that'll be tomorrow night. You've been listening to The Law Hour. The Law Hour is brought to you by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network. We're heard worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Gordon Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and the school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. Well, there's the signal that says our time is up. I'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.